it wasn't for goats, we wouldn't have coffee. Look it up.
I'm gonna get some coffee. You want some coffee?
No, thank you. I'm fine.
And the best sports talk in Acadiana. 103.3 The Goat.
Great Scott!
The Great Scott Show.
And as they head into the final furlong, all of the other radio stations and radio hosts are left in the wake of a keen turn of speed by The Great Scott Show, the champion!
With Scott Prather.
Steal the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into The Great Scott Show on a Tuesday. Only four shows left. My man Jay Walker, we've spent many hours on the radio together over the years. He'll be in studio in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll have our Tuesday chat with the Raging Cajun basketball coaches Gary Broadhead and Bob Marlin. Cajun men winners of 10 straight, first place in the Sun Belt. But kicking off the show with me this morning, friend of the program, friend of mine, New Orleans Saints beat writer. Many of you got to know him back when he was in this area as a beat writer covering the Raging Cajuns. He's a veteran, originally from Wisconsin, but he likes to call Louisiana home. Luke Johnson kicks off the show with us this morning. Good morning, Luke. How's life, brother?
Man, it's going great over here, Scott. I'm glad to hear it's going great for you over there, although I'm sad for the listeners of Lafayette. They don't get to hear your dulcet tones every morning, though.
Dulcet tones. I haven't heard that yet. I appreciate that, Luke. Non like Saints question. This is more of a radio guy question to a writer. Like as a beat writer, especially one for an NFL team. I mean, you guys kind of get hit up a lot for different interviews. I mean, I get hit up a little bit from people I don't know. You know, we host a podcast in this place about the Sun Belt or about the Saints or about the Pelicans. You know, could you come on? You know, and we're in Iowa, and I'm always happy to do it. Of course, that doesn't happen often. You know, I imagine for you guys, it happens a lot. And sometimes, you know, a guy just wants to fill time, and other times, you know, it's a good interview. My question is, like, what do you writers, you sports journalists behind closed doors, actually like think about the radio guys? Do y'all kind of roll your eyes? Are you like, man, like again, this guy won't leave? Like, is it annoying? Just be honest here.
Yeah. Okay. So, full brutal truth here. Most of the time, I do just roll my eyes every time I get a text and say, like, come on, man. You know, like I've got 30 people asking for 15 free minutes of my time this week.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And honestly, most of the time I say no. But that's because I usually, like, the nice thing about this, though, is, like, I get to work with a lot of people who have become friends. You know, you, Dave Schultz. I got to know Ben Love really well. Hunt Palmer and Baton Rouge, and I just, you know, I carve out time for my friends.
You do it long enough, and it's like, you know, I'll go on with you, but if I don't know you, I'm busy. And that's not even to say that you're not busy. I mean, you are, but like, that's a lot of requests.
Yeah. You know, and like, obviously, like if you know, somebody with a really big platform wants me to come on, then yeah,
sure.
You know, if it's
the like, Dan Patrick show,
career wise,
right.
It makes sense. But like, you know, I've got, you know, just some schmuck with, you know, some podcasts that I've never heard of that, frankly, few people have heard of. And I'm just like, look, I don't have that much time. Like, especially during a season. I mean, my time is really, really valuable to me because it's just, you know, I'm working 7 days a week. You know, it's usually a sort of thing where I'm like up and at it by like 8 a.m. and sometimes not finishing until like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So it's like I can't just give all of my time away. But yeah, there are people I make exceptions for, and that's definitely, you know, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that.
I end up talking to a lot of local people that way. So
yeah, no, in doing this as long as I have, I think anyone that's listened to me for a long time would probably agree. The thing I think I'm not great at is always like ending a call, because I'm like telling not with a listener, and sometimes a listener, but like when it's a guest like you or someone, because like I'm very appreciative of their time. And so I'm trying to like tell them how grateful I am knowing, okay, I'm just about to hang up on them too. It's like, you don't find yourself in that situation when you're just like on the phone with like someone that's helping you with your car or your house or maybe right. It's a love. But when you're on the radio and it's live, it's just, you know, man, I really appreciate it. Really, you should just be like, okay, bye. Thanks. And you hang up. But like, I always struggle with that because I want to keep saying thank you because I know I'm just about to hang up on them, you know. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is weird. And, you know, honestly, like sometimes when you get the all right, thanks, and then like the line just goes dead, like yeah. That does feel a little abrupt.
I know. I go on friends of mine shows, and it's just like, all right, Scott, thanks, man. Okay, go, psh, click. Like, all right, I get that. That's yeah. It, you know.
But at the same time, you're right. I do think that there's – it's not like – like when I come out, like usually we're on the phone together for, I don't know, 30 minutes or so whenever I come on your show.
Yeah, we get a little long-winded. We start talking about shows and other things, you know, but that's okay.
But that always just feels like I'm just talking like, you know, a friend. Like it's a little bit different because your format, Scott, is not, it's not like other shows. So,
right. Luke, yeah, man, I just bring you on. We got Luke Johnson. He is from the Advocate. Luke, man, what's wrong with the Saints? Go. You know, that's... I'm like, I want to have conversations. I don't want to just be like, Luke, man, I mean, what do the Saints need to do, man? They suck this year. What do they need to do to be good? Go.
Yeah. That's the way it goes, though.
All right. I'm going to ask you some actual Saints questions, everybody. Luke Johnson's our guest at By Luke Johnson. And I want to defend you guys, too. You know, it's hard to say yes to everyone. You can reach a point in your career where, you know, you don't have a lot of time. There are only some platforms you want to utilize. And it's at the same time, I know there's a party that's like, man, it's some young cat. You know, he's just trying to make it, and you know, and at the same time I want to help him, but I don't really have the time, and I can, you know, maybe I can send him to someone else. You know, I think that's a good thing to do. Once you've been in it long enough, you know, someone that's sort of younger in your profession that's maybe eager to just talk, and you just pass the number along to them. Like that always works too. You know, it's a kind of a way of like not being like, not coming off as a jerk, not to say that by saying no, you are absolutely not, but by kind of just spreading the love and giving yourself, you know, that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I do that a lot. Now sometimes I do it to other friends who I know are also busy, just as you know, as a joke.
I love it. Oh, you know, but who would love to talk to you, my guy? My guy with, you know, three followers and a podcast that, you know, God bless him, his mom listens to. I mean, he's just trying to start. So,
I appreciate that hustle. Like, yeah, absolutely. I was, you know, at one point I was working for the Reveille covering, you know, like men's golf. You know, nobody was reading anything I was writing. I'm sure nobody wanted to talk to me when I was a young reporter. So I totally get it.
Yeah.
But I also just, you know, just knowing that I do get inundated with requests, especially during the season. It's more often than not, I'm saying no than yes.
Luke Johnson, our guest, 103.3 The Goat, simulcast on 1420. There's this, I think there's a fine line between, you know, bringing on a guest and trying to like, you know, help your show, but also promote them. And like, excuse me, you know, a host that just kind of goes through the motions and is just asking people they don't know to come on to fill time. Like I say, there's a fine line. No, there's a very definitive line. Like it's pretty obvious. And, you know, I think when you bring someone on, they're giving you their time. You want to promote their stuff. And I always try to bring people on that I find interesting, that I find are talented. And at the same time, you know, if I bring someone on and it's just not a good interview, you know, I can tell they don't want to be there. I usually don't ask them back. It's no hard feelings. It's just there's a give and take to it. And it always kind of annoys me when I hear someone in radio that's clearly just like using, I say you guys, it could be anyone in the sports media world, but just taking your time for granted as if like they're owed it or something. It's just a little pet peeve of mine is all.
Well, I appreciate that, Scott. But look, I just think that you have never been like that. And that's, I think, why it's, I mean, it's not always an automatic yes. You know, sometimes I do like have stuff going on, but yeah, I'm like 95% of the time, like available to come on your show.
Well, next time I bother you, it'll just be to like grab a po' boy. It won't be to come on the radio. So it'll be a little easier.
Yeah. You know it, man.
All right. Luke Johnson,
New Orleans are back there left yet.
You know it. By Luke Johnson, BY Luke Johnson on Twitter. Luke, let's talk a little Saints. So I'm going to ask you, you know, I know you wrote yesterday about the new DC. I want to take a minute to talk about Zach Strieff for a moment, because a thought came to me this morning when I was walking my dog. I was just kind of thinking about the show and a few topics. And, you know, I know Zach Strieff is going to Denver. He's going to coach with Sean Payton. And he's been, you know, a Midwest guy that's been in New Orleans for so long, since he got drafted back in 06 and was a player. And then everyone knows he was the play-by-play guy. And then he joined the coaching staff. And now, yeah, he's going to Denver. He gets promoted. He gets a chance to sort of move up in the coaching world. Wouldn't it be almost apropos, Luke, if at some point, I'm not talking about next year, but if at some point Zach Strieff was the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, like he would do something that I assume is I'm sure there's been like a former head coach that became like a color analyst. I promise you there has never been an NFL player that was on a team, was a captain, then was the play-by-play guy on the home radio call, and then at one point was the head coach of the team. I think he's just trying to do something that's never been done before. I don't know if his sights are set on being a future Saints coach, but there's something that would feel kind of apropos about it as he continues to kind of climb that ladder as a coach.
That's the football EGOT. That's what he's going for. You know, I haven't thought about it until now, but I do think that's a really interesting thing. I think Zach has head coach material written all over him. Absolutely. He's really intelligent. He really, really, really knows how to communicate with his people, and he knows the game. And yeah, I know people were upset yesterday when the news came out because, the coaching news this offseason has not been great.
Right.
Just on its face, you know, you lose both of you guys who were co-defensive coordinators, and that's the one side of the ball where they were pretty good last year. And, you know, I think people were not happy. They decided to retain Pete Carmichael. You know, now you add Zach Strieff to this. Obviously he's a really familiar face around here. People have gotten to know him for a long time. You know, they were listening to him. They were watching him play. I don't think people really, really truly know, you know, if you're just talking about the average fan, whether or not he's a good coach because he's an assistant to an assistant.
Sure.
But he's a name. He's a name everybody recognizes. But I think the problem with having good coaches is they get taken away by other teams, for promotions. That's exactly what he's getting. And he deserves it. And, you know, the Saints had no way to promote him. They weren't going to make him the offensive coordinator. They have a offensive line coach already. They had a vacancy of the tight ends coach, but I don't know if Strieff is going to coach them right now. I think they just they had no way of really keeping him on the staff. I'm sure they would have loved to have kept him on the staff, but at some point, good coaches are going to end up coaching elsewhere. They're not going to coach in one place for 30 years. That said, I think it'd be really interesting if someday he does come back, because you're right. There's no way. I think it's already probably unlikely. There's a player who spent a dozen years with the team, then was the play-by-play guy, then went right into coaching for the team. That's a pretty incredible career arc right there.
It's already unprecedented. And look, like you said, we don't really know if he's really good or not as a coach. He He seems to have done well at everything he's tried at. He's overcome odds. Seventh round pick. Oh, he's going to have trouble making the team. He gets his first start against Tampa Bay. Simeon Rice is standing across from him. He's also got a club on his hand, and he has a great game. And then, you know, works his way eventually into the starting lineup after a few years. Is a captain, is part of a Super Bowl team. And then play-by-play, it's like, wait, what? That's never happened. And now at only 39, just moving on to his next coaching job. But if you want to move up in the coaching world, you know, that's something that you have to do. You're probably not going to stay at the same place for a while. So, I don't know, 10, 12 years down the road, 15, whenever it might be, if he's ever the head coach of the Saints, we know Gail in the Saints front office likes him a lot. So I'm going to always be following his coaching career, because if he ever gets elevated to like a coordinator, I feel like, oh, it's only a matter of time before he ends up back in New Orleans. And, I don't know if anyone else has had the thought, but it came to me this morning. Let's talk about some other, you know, you mentioned all the coaching, all the coaching news. Joe Woods, new D coordinator. He was fired by, you know, Cleveland, and I had somebody, you know, email me all this stuff about him. Like, clearly all they had done was read his Wikipedia page, which, to be honest, was about all I had done, like, when I first heard the news. I didn't know much about him. I've kind of looked back at his resume since they hired him, and, you know, really good DB coach before he became the D coordinator in Cleveland. A lot of success in Denver, a lot of success in San Francisco. But ultimately, I feel like, Luke, after, you know, Nielsen and Chris Richard left, you weren't going to – it was going to be hard to find a D coordinator that wasn't perhaps fired or wasn't being elevated from a positional group role, because they know that when they go to New Orleans, Dennis Allen is going to be really the guy running the defense. So with that – you know, do you feel like overall, all things considered, based on who left, that Joe Woods was, I guess, just a hire that makes sense? I mean, I know Saints fans want to have a strong opinion about everything. I had trouble having a really strong opinion about Joe Woods, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, I was even wondering after they let Richard go, if they're even going to hire a defensive coordinator. And look, I get Saints fans' frustration with what happened last season. And I am in no way trying to say like everything's going to be fine, because you know, they have a lot of work to do to kind of get back in everybody's good graces. But I do think there's just some real overreaction to some of these moves. They're not going to get Steve Wilks to come in and basically be like an assistant coach. Right. I mean, that's basically what their defensive coordinator is right now. They're not a play caller. There's a reason, you know, Ryan Nielsen's been trying to go somewhere else for a couple of years. You know, he's wanted to level up. Nobody wants to come into a defensive coordinator role in title only. Like nobody with real career aspirations, right? I'm not saying Joe Woods doesn't have real career aspirations, but he's just coming off of getting fired by Cleveland as their defensive coordinator. So, like, I think that's the realistic thing to look at here, is that they're you know, unless they're hiring some young up and comer who's really on nobody's radar, I think it makes sense to find an experienced coach, one who's who's had a lot of success in terms of designing pass defenses. Cleveland had a top five pass defense each of the last 2 years. I think in his 5 years as defensive coordinator, his teams have finished top five overall defense twice. I think he's a good coach. He's an experienced coach. He's somebody who's, you know, been on Dennis Allen's staff before, even though it was brief. I don't see anything wrong with it. Now that, you know, there's plenty of time for people to find things wrong with it if they get off to a slow start. But you know, I just think that, you know, people have to be realistic with their expectations. So the Saints are coming off a down year. They're not bringing anybody in who's, you know, going to have a lot of control in exactly what the defense looks like. That's Dennis Allen's, that's his unit. So, they got to kind of deal with what they can get there.
Do you feel like perhaps there was, when, like, I wasn't surprised Ryan Nielsen left. Same reason you mentioned, right? He wants to go cut his teeth, not be a co-coordinator, be a, you know, DC. And then they parted ways, you know, with Chris Richard, or both sides agreed, whatever you want to read into it. From what I've understood and folks that I've talked to, you know, it just seemed like there was not, it wasn't as fluid, perhaps, between the three of them. I'm talking about Dennis Allen, Nielsen, and Richard, as perhaps Allen wanted it to be. Was there maybe a little regret about having the co-coordinator thing? Because I always say that when you have co-coordinators, especially, you know, at a position like that your head coach is calling the plays anyway, whether it be co-coordinators, co-D coordinators, depending on what your head coach is, like, was there maybe a little too many, not regret because they weren't trying to help those guys get another job. I think that's usually why you do the co-coordinator thing, but maybe a little regret that there were the voices, all the voices in the room kept things from running as smoothly as Dennis Allen perhaps thought that they were going to run.
Yeah. I mean, I think that should have been a concern right from the beginning. You know, if really the only point of doing the co-coordinator job is because, you know, they had two qualified guys and they couldn't pick between them, you know, and they want to give them both promotions and title. I mean, that doesn't really make any sense. Then all those people, whether it's Dennis or Ryan or Richard, they'll have, you know, at least something approaching an equal voice in a room, right? I just think that it never really made sense to me from the beginning. You know, even if Dennis was going to be the play caller and it was going to be his defense, it's like, what, you know, who are you really trying to serve here? Who are you trying to please? Because, you know, the end result was like, you know, nobody, I guess. I don't think anybody was really happy. You know, Nielsen obviously took the Falcons job and, you know, I think he's going to do a pretty good job there. I think he's a really good coach. And you know, I just think that, from everything I heard about Richard, he, you know, that they weren't really happy with how things were going, even though they had the NFL's number two pass defense. That it was just a, you know, kind of a strained relationship with that whole staff and him, and maybe not the whole staff, but, you know, organizationally with Chris Richard. So yeah, I just think it's the whole thing just felt off from the beginning. Nobody really knew, despite multiple attempts to explain it, what everybody was responsible for. So even though it's Dennis Allen's final call, you know, I think there's a little bit of confusion when you have, you know, that many people with that kind of title.
Luke Johnson, our guest, 103.3 The GOAT simulcast on 1420. It's the Great Scott Show. Last Saints thing for you. Derek Carr, you know, he was going to be a subject of conversation for Saints fans regardless. Should they trade? Should they not? I've always maintained, listen, you know, let it play out. If he's released, you know, offer him a deal. But breaking the bank for him, I mean, is he a guy that is he better than what you had this season? I think so. Is he a guy that's suddenly going to turn your whole fortunes around and fix every problem on the offense? Absolutely not. And so I think it's kind of like cautionary shopping, if you will. You don't want to just be reckless like you have all these gift cards. You want to be prudent. And I think by trading a, you know, potentially a first-round pick late and all that other stuff, I don't see him going that route, Luke, but ultimately, you know, I'm sure you've been asked about Derek Carr from some of the radio hits you've done. It might just be like, Derek Carr, Luke, what's they going to do, man? They going to get him or what? Go.
Well, okay, so here's I have a lot of different thoughts on this, honestly. So, one, I'm really interested to see how many teams are really talking to the Raiders at all about the trade. Because look, I mean, 40 mil guaranteed, you know, you're looking at a $35 million cap hit next year, and then north of 40 each of the 2 years after that for a 32-year-old quarterback who's, I think he's top 30 touchdowns once in his career. I don't know. That's the contract is the one thing that I think could scare a lot of teams off. But if the Saints really, really like Derek Carr, if they're desperate for him, and if other teams aren't in the mix for him for a trade, they'd rather just pursue him on the open market, which, because that does seem like the prudent thing to do, right? then, yeah, I mean, maybe the Saints would be bidding against themselves here. Yeah, maybe you can trade a sixth-round pick for Derek Carr because the Raiders aren't going to get anything else otherwise, you know? I mean, I think that's really a realistic possibility. I don't think we have to talk about them giving up a one because Derek Carr kind of holds all the cards here. The Raiders are in a really bad position to negotiate. That said, if they do release him, and for your listeners, the deadline, I think it's February 15th. It's next Wednesday, I think. It's basically if they don't have a trade partner by then his $40 million in guarantees, they kick in, and then the Raiders are on the hook for that. So they're going to have a decision make by then regardless. You know, if they don't have a trade partner, then they're almost definitely going to cut them rather than eat that salary. So so if they do cut them, which I think is probably a realistic possibility here, then I think it becomes really interesting because then you're competing against, I don't know, seven or eight teams that could use a quarterback, some of whom might be in better positions than you are, right? Like the 49ers have two quarterbacks on the roster who a lot of people like in Brock Purdy and Trey Lance, and not a great injury outlook for either of those guys coming into next season. And they have a Super Bowl caliber team. Like maybe the 49ers be like, hey, come here, you know, win a Super Bowl. We'll pay you $20 million this year or whatever the case may be. Right. Are the Saints going to be able to compete against that? I mean, maybe, but you know, there's so many teams out there with unsettled quarterback positions who could use a player like Derek Carr. And I don't know if you want to be competing against them if you're the Saints, because you know, I don't know if your current assets line up as well as everybody else's do. So maybe they have to get aggressive and pull a trade if that's the guy they really want.
And then if you do that, right, you lock yourself into, you know, some guaranteed money there and some cap hits. And I know there, you know, some you can always extend and convert into signing bonus and all that other stuff. But it does sort of lock you in financially to a spot. But to your point, I think if a trade for Derek Carr were to happen, it's going to be for like a late round pick, you know, cash considerate, you know, one of those things, not some highly sought out pick that, you know, Raiders fans would make you think they're going to get for him. And so from a leverage standpoint, the Raiders don't really have much, but you just, I think, painted the scenario perfectly as to why the Saints might potentially pull the trigger on a trade based on what other teams are to try to avoid the market buying him out. But how do they even feel about him overall? I don't know. I mean, he's a guy that's you know, the ceiling is high, but, you know, he's there's been a lot of times where he's fallen well short of the ceiling, and there's been some inconsistency there. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
He's also played on some bad Raiders teams too, right? But like it's like how much of that is the quarterback and how much of that is the team around him?
Yep.
I don't know. And he's a really polarizing player. I'll tell you that. Like I've written about him a couple times now, and I've had some people in my email like, you know, my inbox just saying like, are you an idiot for writing about Derek Carr? And other people be like, they need to go out and get him. So yeah, I don't know. I think like, you know, like with anything, unless they go out and get Lamar Jackson, I think there's going to be a mixed bag reaction from the Saints fan base, but they need to do something in a position. And I just think they got to be careful because Mickey Loomis is talking about managing the salary cap back to the middle, right? I don't think they want to just blow up their roster and get rid of all their expensive players and eat a massive cap hit tank and hope they can get Caleb Williams next year. Like, I don't think that's their strategy, nor do I think it ever will be. But when you add a player who's going to cost you $120 million over 3 years, you know, it requires you to move a lot of things around, and a lot of that money is going to be moved into future years. And you know, all of a sudden it becomes a lot harder to manage a cap back to the middle if like just in order to get a player on your team this year, you have to restructure 10 guys and create, you know, a bunch of money and avoid years, and that money is going to come back as dead money later on.
Right.
That's what they were dealing with last year. They were paying dead money out, like I think $25 million in dead money to Drew Brees and Teron Armstead. Right. And this year, I mean, they're going to have another huge dead money bill if David Onyemata and Marcus Davenport go somewhere else. So, you know, does it make sense to go out? I mean, you have to get a quarterback on this roster for sure. And I think you can't count on getting one in the draft because 29 is not an ideal place to pick a quarterback. But if you're trying to manage cap back to the middle, can you do that with a Derek Carr? Can you do it with a Lamar Jackson? Like if Lamar Jackson became available, the Saints would probably be like, hell yes, we want in on that.
Sure.
But like, can you actually manage a cap back to the middle when you're paying that guy $55 million a year?
No, you can't. You have to convert into signing bonus and have Gale write a bunch of checks and keep pushing it back farther and farther and farther and convincing yourself that, well, the TV money for the next TV contract 10 years from now, that's whenever, you know, I mean, if you can get LeBron, if you can get Lamar Jackson, you do whatever you have to do. Luke Johnson has been our guest. Great stuff. All right, man, before I let you run, any shows, any movies, you seen anything lately that you'd recommend?
Yes, I have. Well, first of all, Chelsea and I, before she left, we were talking off air before I got on. My wife just started a new job with Axios. She's in Washington, D.C. for their company retreat. But before she left for that, we watched the first episode of The Last of Us because everybody's talking about it. I'm like really excited to keep that going.
I can't wait. I can't wait for that. But I'm also doing the thing that we've talked about. I'm like waiting till it airs. Whenever there's like two episodes left, I'll like start, you know, 2 weeks before. So that way, you know, I like sync it up. And by the time I'm finally ready to watch the last episode, it's like premiering the next night.
Yeah. See, Chelsea and I were talking about doing that, but it's been such a part of the kind of cultural zeitgeist that we had to start it up.
David.
And yeah, it was awesome. First episode was great. I think we finished, The Bear recently.
Oh yeah, I've heard good stuff.
That was awesome. That was so good. I was a little skeptical going in. I'm kind of blanking on the lead actor's name. But he was so good. There was one point in there where he just does like a 7 minute straight monologue. It was outstanding.
Jeremy Allen White, I think.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that one. It was, I've never worked in the service industry. I've never worked in a kitchen, but everybody, I have a lot of friends who have and currently do, and they say it's a like spot on accurate representation of that. Let's see,
All right. I mean,
kind of
look,
blanking on the rest. Those are good right now.
Those are getting plenty of love. I'm going to try my best to hold off on The Last of Us, but you know, I tried it with the Game of Thrones spinoff, and I lasted a few weeks, and then I just started watching it like 3 weeks in, and quickly caught up, and then had to wait week to week. And other than that, man, I don't know. I watched Under the Banner of Heaven, which was Andrew Garfield was great in it. It was a tough watch at times. It was based on some true events, but you know, it's on Hulu if you want to check it out. There's a little history there. I don't need to rehash it on the air with everybody because I don't need to keep you any longer than I already have, man. But Luke, brother, I appreciate you spending so much time over the years coming on the show. It's always fun talking, you know, back in the day Cajuns. It's fun talking. Shoot, then you were in LSU. We were talking LSU baseball, and then you're on the Saints beat, and we, of course, talk Saints. And we've always talked sort of war movies and TV shows and stuff like that. And I just appreciate you and you know, the work that you do and your wife does, and wishing you nothing but the best, man. And I look forward to talking to you off the air next time I'm in NOLA or you're in Lafayette.
That sounds great, man. It's been a true pleasure. Look, we've been knowing each other for 7.5 years now. So, it's a long time of just doing shows together and watching sporting events with each other. And, man, you are truly one of the best, and I wish you nothing but the best luck for you and your family and your new adventure. And look, I can't wait to send you a bunch of Parks and Recs gifts.
Yeah. So. Dude, you're not the first person that's told me that. A bunch of people were. I have a friend of mine named Seth Johnson. He used to come on the show many years ago. He lived here, and he's just like, yeah, he immediately started sending me some gifts. So I might have to watch the show. I hear it's great, loaded with people I like. I might just have to start watching it just so that I can interact with the gifts and understand them all and going in that line of work. I just feel like it would make sense. People are like, what, are you going to be Adam Scott? Are you going to be Chris Pratt? I'm like, I haven't seen the show, but I'll pick one at some point.
You're an Adam Scott to me, yeah.
I love Adam Scott, look, by the way. I mean, Severance. I mean, how good was Severance? Come on.
It's on our list of shows. We still got to off our list. We're so far behind. We're so far behind.
Well, football season's over, man. Maybe after you know, this Derek Carr stuff, you'll have a moment to breathe.
Doubtful, man.
All the best, dude. I gotta hang up now and do that abrupt goodbye. But I appreciate you, man, and I'll talk to you down the line.
Yeah, man. Always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
You got it. That is Luke Johnson at By Luke Johnson on Twitter. By Luke Johnson. Give him a follow. Check out all of his stuff. We're gonna take a quick timeout. We'll come back. Coach Gary Broadhead gonna join me. Heartbreaker on Saturday at the Cajun. No, man. But this team right there, still right in the thick of it. And then we'll talk to Bob Marlin, Raging Cajun. Man, what an atmosphere on Saturday night, huh? Cajuns winners of 10 straight. It's all coming your way. Don't go anywhere. The Great Scott Show continues right after this.
If it's not the GOAT, then they're full of sheep. 103.3 The GOAT, the greatest sports talk of all time.
Welcome back into the Great Scott Show, 103.3 The GOAT, simulcast on 1420. We have Coach Bob Marlin coming up shortly, but kicking things off this segment, Raging Cajun women's basketball coach, Coach Gary Broadhead. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, doing great. How about you, Scott?
I'm doing well, Coach. I guess it's kind of how you look at it, right? Because that was a heartbreaking loss. I mean, that's how I look at it, right? I'm just an outsider. You guys fought back. You're down 9 with 90 seconds left. You tie it. Sherry Porter, huge 3. You go to OT. You have a lead late. And, you know, if you miss free throws, few opportunities, you lose a heartbreaker. And if you win that, you're right there in first place. But the other way to look at it, Coach, is you're 2 overtime losses away from sitting atop the Sun Belt. I mean, the team in first place, you lost 2 heartbreakers to an OT. You were right there both times. You know, I know it's tough to lose, but on the other hand, you guys realize, look, we can compete with anybody in this league, and that's what you're going to need to do if you want to accomplish your ultimate goal, which is winning the tournament and going to the NCAA tournament.
No, you're right. You know, I mean, whether you win the league or not, you know, it just kind of gives you a good seed. But, yeah, you got to have to win the tournament. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, we're just kind of disappointed. You know, the way it ended, you know, that intentional foul, we got a ruling this morning, and it was an intentional foul. So we could have chose the person to shoot the free throw and got the ball back. And so, you know.
And instead, what happened was y'all exchanged free throws.
I don't know why we have monitors sometimes. Yeah, they should have gone to the monitor and looked at it, but they didn't. And that was my argument. I had no more timeouts left, so I was trying to get them to go to the monitor, look at it, because it was so obvious that it was an intentional foul away from the ball.
And instead, you know, you exchange free throws and, you know, you get to OT and, you know, you had the lead late and you know, it kind of fell away. But right there, I mean, it's how tough is it to move on from that? Because on one hand, if it's on a Thursday, you're like, man, we get to play tomorrow. On the other, yeah, you kind of got to sit with it for a little bit. I know you're anxious to get back out on the floor this week, Coach, but the fact that it happened on Saturday at home and the way that it did, how hard is it to just kind of move on and focus on the bigger picture?
Well, I mean, you do. You just have to move. You know what I feel? You know, it's like we're adults. This is our profession. You know, we're able to kind of get through it. It happens, you know, and you try to do your best for your kid. I just feel sorry for them. You know, they worked hard to come back, and they worked all hard all week. It was an important game to them. You know, when you come to play in Division One sports and you got an opportunity to win a title and all that, that those things are important to them. And, you know, you kind of feel it, you know. And hopefully that, you know, I've always been taught, you know, through your struggles and through your, you know, the heartaches and all that, that's where you get better. So hopefully we utilize this to kind of fall forward, get better, and puts us in a position to where maybe we'll be more, a little bit more prepared in the tournament. So that's what you got to look at. I got some great kids, though, man. I tell you, just, you know, proud of them, how hard they played and come back. So, you know, we'll keep on going. You know, that's what we do, you know.
No question.
I think it's just the Cajun way. You know, we call it about being the Cajun way. You know, just be honest with one another and keep on working hard. And, you know, playing for one another is a big deal.
You guys have won three of your last four on the road. One of them was an overtime loss at Troy. And, you know, it's on the road again. Your next four are on the road. And you have a matchup at James Madison this Thursday. You're at South Alabama on Saturday. What's the key, Coach, to, you know, you're right there in the standings. There's a log jam for second place. I know, like we said, ultimately you got to win the tournament, but you'd love to have a top four seed too, right? You'd love to have the double bye. I know that's what you want. You want to get to the NCAA tournament. What's the approach need to be on this road trip to continue some of that success you guys have had on the road as of late?
I think we got to keep doing what we're doing. You know, we're defending really well. We feel a little bit more comfortable with our offense, even though, you know, we didn't put a complete game together this past week. We got to make sure that we do that, you know, play for four quarters. And, you know, it's going to be doing the little things, you know, like for us to out-rebound, we were down two rebounds on Troy. And I mean, they're top in the country in rebounding, but we had more offensive rebounds. We had two more offensive rebounds. So we're doing some things better when we have to. We just got to get more consistent at it. James Madison, I don't know a lot about them other than they got a really, really good guard. This will be the first time that I've been coaching for a while, never played their program. I followed their program. They're very fundamental. They do a lot of good things defensively and offensively. So it'll be a tough game up there. You know, and they play really well at home. You know, they were leading the conference for most of the season, you know, until Troy kind of took over. So that'll be a tough one on the road. And then, you know, South Al's playing a lot better, you know, they're at the bottom of the league, but they're playing a lot better and they play really well at home. So, you know, we got a tough week, you know. I mean, actually, we got six games left, and I tell you, all of them are going to be tough games, you know. We got to, you know, and my thing, too, is I look at it, we just got to get better, you know, keep getting better, getting better. And you're playing your best when you go in a tournament. It's going to be a big deal, I think, for us. And you're right. You know, the seeding could really help a team like us that we're playing 7, 8, 9 kids. You know, we're not playing a lot of kids. So the least games you played are probably the better for us.
How's Lene Wheaton feeling, Coach?
You know, she's better, you know. I think Lene's kind of the kind of kid that I think when you're going to see her come back, you're going to be like, well, what was wrong with her, you know, because she can come back at 100%, you know. And it looks really good for us to, you know, get on the road and probably get her in on Thursday, you know. I think we feel pretty good that she's just about healed, and it's an ankle injury that, you know, it's taking a little bit longer than we would like. But I think she's pretty close to it. We'll find out today for sure, you know. We'll find out if she's, you know, what she's looking like and all that once we get into practice today.
Louisiana Rage Cajun Women's Basketball Coach Gary Broadhead has been our guest. Cajuns taking on James Madison Thursday in Harrisonburg, Virginia. 5:45 pregame. You can hear it right here on 103.3 The Goat simulcast on 1420. Coach, it's been a pleasure over the last, 10-plus years talking to you, man. It's been a lot of conversations. You know, this is my last week with this show, but wishing you nothing but the best, man, and, you know, I'll be rooting for you guys.
Well, you know, Scott, our relationship grew through the years, those 10 years and stuff like that. And I am truly appreciative. UL's appreciative. Our women's program's appreciative of how much you promoted us and how much you care about our program and the direction we were going. So, man, I can't thank you enough, man. Appreciate you a lot and wish you the best.
Thank you so much, Coach. All the best to you, too. All right, we'll go right into the men's team, Rage of Cajuns, 10 straight. You know, I told you guys a couple weeks ago, I said, they win the first few on this road trip, they're going to win 10 in a row. Can they win 11 in a row? Well, battle for sole possession of first place will be this Thursday in Hattiesburg. But here to talk about all that is the head coach of Louisiana Rage of Cajun men's basketball, Bob Marlin. Good morning, Coach. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, man. I was I was in the crowd Saturday night. I wasn't down on, you know, where we sit with the press. But I had the family, I had the kids out, you know. They liked the fabulous Cajun chicken, and I enjoyed them as well. You know, Russell does a great job. But I love what I saw on the floor, man. You know, some outside of turnovers in the first half. I mean, you guys played so well and really, I thought, owned the paint. And Jordan Brown was tremendous. But more than anything, that was a Marshall team that, you know, one game behind you on the standings heading into it. You win by double digits. You protect home court. And the atmosphere, Coach, it was outstanding, man. I mean, that's home court advantage, which y'all had on Saturday night.
Well, it was really a great thing to see, Scott. I'm glad your children enjoyed the game and saw so many kids there these last two games. And adults as well, right? Because a lot of people want to come back and see the chicken. But,
right.
It was great atmosphere, and our guys did a good job. We played solid basketball. We jumped on them on the glass. Beat them 47-25. Jordan Brown, I rebounded their whole team in the first half, 14-11. And that kind of set the tone for the game. And that, along with great defense, helped us go wire to wire against Marshall.
Yeah, they had no answer for Jordan in the first half, and he finishes with 26-20. Not to say he didn't have a good second half, but, you know, he was unstoppable in the first half. And Greg Williams, the way he's played this year, Coach, we've talked about it. He was tremendous. It was a game where, you know, maybe it wasn't the strongest performance from the three-point line or free-throw line, but because you guys were so good in the paint, it didn't really matter. And you guys have had games where you've done really well in those two spots. So heading into this stretch that you're about to go into, I mean, this is as big a game as we've had in the Sun Belt in a long time coming up Thursday. You know, you and Southern Miss both sitting at the top, sole possession of first place. You got them earlier this year. You're two games up on everyone else, but it's a tight cluster in there. Seeding's going to be very important for this conference tournament. In your mind, what's the thing that, you know what, we have to do this particular thing well if we want to go into Hattiesburg like we did last year and get out with a victory?
We'll have to play good basketball for sure. We played good basketball on the road, Scott, and you've heard me say this many times. It doesn't matter where you play, it's how you play. And we know we've got a good team. And Marshall came in our environment. We're going to try and go into Southern Miss's environment. We're going to have to play like we played the other night and like we've been playing. Austin Crowley is a really good guard, an all-conference guard, and we limited him to 14 points in the first game. He got several late, and then we gave Philippe Hasse, who's another real big gun for those guys, about 6'11", 245. We held him to 9, and we're going to have to defend those guys again. We're going to have to play great defense, and should be an exciting game. And, you know, we're second in the country, Scott, in wins away from home. So we have done a good job on the road, and we'll have to go play well to win this one.
7-4 on the road, undefeated at home. Overall, you guys are 20-4. Southern Miss is I don't think they've lost since they played you guys. They're winners of 7 straight. I mean, you guys beat them by 14. It was a month ago. But what do you take away from that earlier matchup? Can you take anything away from that earlier matchup and utilize it coming up here Thursday?
Well, we've watched the film. Our guys do a great job in our office watching film, breaking things down. We've done that Sunday, Monday. Last night, I watched the first game again and just have to continue to look and see. There'll be a couple of things that we might be able to do differently. They've added a player that was injured the first time we played him. He's a guard. Brings a lot of excitement to their team. We try to get the crowd going, try to make some home run plays. We got to make sure that doesn't take place, but should be a great crowd. I know they're trying to get as many people as they can there at Reed Green, and we've got a bus going over. Anyone that wants to jump on the bus can look at LouisianaAlumni.org and fill out a form and jump on there. I think it's only like 40-something seats, and it was filling up rapidly last night.
That's a good thing. Go check it out. Get on the road, and you know, seeing that student section and the fans making the noise they were Saturday, it was awesome. More of that for sure, whether it be home or road. Coach, before I let you go, man, in your years at UL, and you know, you've been coaching a long time, but in your tenure with Louisiana, where would you rank this year's team as far as chemistry goes?
It'd be one or two. I think I've had three or four really good teams, but this one's one or two. And they're just unique. All of them are different. Scott, that's the beautiful thing about coaching. To me, it's like raising children. You love them. You get frustrated with them. You have to get after them sometimes. But that's the beauty of it, because when it all comes together, it's really a great fit, and you can sit back as a coach and really let it run itself at times, and that's what this group has done. You know, the two teams in the top that have 20 wins. There's 10 teams that have 20 wins, Scott, in the country, and two of them are playing Thursday night. And you know, we're number three in the mid-major poll right now, behind St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and then Southern Miss is sixth. So, and Marshall's still ranked in there too. So, this is a big game for us. We're excited about it. I'm going to have a bunch of high school friends and college friends that live in Jackson or are on the coast are going to come, and it'll be a great atmosphere.
Yeah, it's as big a Sun Belt game as there's been in a long time. To your point, Coach, and 7:30 tip scheduled, 7 o'clock pregame. Jay Walker will have it over on our sibling station, News Talk 96.5 KPL. But Coach Marlin, it's been great getting to know you over. Geez, man, I think I might have still been in my 20s the first time I met you. So wishing you nothing but the best, and I'm sure I'll see you around town and at the Cajun Dome from time to time. But good luck the rest of the way this season, and I appreciate you spending a lot of time on this show over the years.
No, it's been my pleasure, Scott. I think a mutual friend introduced us when I first came here, and we've had a solid relationship since. Besides you trying to get me to sing on the radio one time, and you know the song I'm talking about. Everything else has been lovely. I wish you the best, and I hope your family continues to come to games, bring those kids to the game, and we need that excitement. I think they enjoy as well.
Is that are you ready to forgive me yet or no?
I'll forgive you if you don't play it again.
All right, how about just one more time? Because
I knew you were going to say that.
Just one more time, because I'm going to be going away. Like, no one's ever going to hear it again Coach.
That's the whole plan. I'm hanging up. Okay.
All the best, Coach. Thank you.
All right, Scott.
Louisiana head basketball coach Bob Marlin, and the Cajuns are rolling right now. And I love how he blames me and not Jay Walker at all. Like, yeah, it was my idea, but listen to this clip act like Jay.
Don't do it. The man said, "Don't do it."
No, he just said he was going to hang up. Now.
No, he said.
What you going to do with all the junk inside your trunk?
Now, isn't that a great lyric? Don't you wish you had thought of that?
Oh yeah, I'm a get you drunk, get you love drunk off my hump, my hump, my hump, my hump, my hump, my hump.
One time I was talking to him, and
should
I was like,
"Should be pointed out, Coach, that I tried to talk him out of it."
Oh, please, listen, you're in the clip. Like, don't you just wish you know? They don't even hear me in the clip. It's you and him.
I understand.
All the best, Coach. I appreciate you taking the time, and yes, I appreciate you reading the lyrics to my humps on a Tuesday. I don't remember how many years ago it was, but let's just say it left an indelible mark on this show. Jay Walker, that's him. He's in studio. We've got the 8 o'clock hour. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to play one terrible tune today that, you know, I just think Jay loves the song so much. We're not going to do a whole Terrible Tune Tuesday segment, but we will play one of the great TTTs that also has left a mark, judging by things that people have told me that listen to the show. We got a whole hour in store. Don't go anywhere. It's the Great Scott Show, 103.3 The GOAT, simulcast on 1420. It's the GOAT, the greatest sports talk of all time.
Great Scott!
The Great Scott Show.
And as they head into the final furlong, all of the other radio stations and radio hosts are left in the wake of a keen turn of speed by the Great Scott Show, the champion.
With Scott Prather.
Steal the show.
Welcome in to the 8 o'clock hour of the Great Scott Show. I am joined now by Jay Walker, voice of the Raging Cajuns, former host of Bird's Eye View and co-host of the Sports Gap, friend of mine, and a man that, along with myself, we proudly created Terrible Tune Tuesday.
That is correct.
How you feeling? It's good to be home for a week, not on the road?
For a week. I leave tomorrow, going to Hattiesburg.
But, I mean, you were home for like...
I was home for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah. And so I'll leave for Hattiesburg tomorrow. We'll get home late Saturday night for Troy. And then next Wednesday at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'll meet the softball team over at Lamson Park, and we'll head to Clearwater, Florida, where we'll spend 8 days together watching some of the best softball in America.
Ooh, I was talking to Coach Glasgow about that last week. I was like, Coach, man, you just didn't decide to take it a little light on the schedule, huh? And what I love is how open Coach is about like all of his decisions. He's like, well, you know, we feel like if we go into this thing early and we play well, we could possibly host a regional or a super regional. And if we don't, he's like, if we don't play great or if we play okay but, you know, lose some games, it might change how I approach the rest of the season. But ultimately, it's going to make us better because we'll be better battle-tested. We'll be better than if we had played somebody that, you know, wasn't very good. So he said the one downside is, you know, I know our fans don't get to see as many of those games at home. He's like, you know, and we're working on that to have more matchups in the future at home. But he said outside of that, there's no downside to it. That's his whole viewpoint. And I think he, you know, everything he does is for a reason. And that I won't even say Murderer's Row because it's an extremely difficult early schedule, but the Cajuns are a very good team. I mean, it's not like they're an FCS football team that is, you know, going right to play, you know, at Ohio State. It's not like that at all. They're going to compete and they're going to, you know, win some games.
And I think they will. Interesting this year. Of course, the Cajuns do host the Sun Belt Conference tournament at Lamson Park. But during the regular season, they got 22 at home, 34 away from home. Baseball has 34 at home and 22 away from home. The schedule's just the opposite.
You excited for baseball season?
I am. I enjoyed going out to Fan Day on Saturday.
And Julian Brock was hitting some back home to Texas, huh?
He was great in the home run derby. You know, that this isn't like the home run derby in Major League Baseball. You know, if you get on a roll, hit a few of them out, that's pretty good. And he hit 10 of them in his second round. And, it started to feel like the way you feel when you watch it on television. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How about the environment Saturday night?
It's great. It was great.
When was the last time the Cajun Dome was popping like that for a men's basketball game?
You know, the last time they had a crowd that big was a game against ULM the year that they won 26 or 27, whatever it was.
Oh, it was the senior night game that they lost?
No. That was against Little Rock.
Okay.
I think to get that kind of atmosphere, I think you got to go back farther than that. You know, I'm thinking more like the early days of Bob Marlin's tenure when, you know, you'd play late in the year in a conference game, whether it was Denver or Western Kentucky or whoever, and they'd be getting after it. I think you got to almost go back to that.
At his first year, you know, they started out a little slow and then went on a great run. And I remember by the end of that season, yeah, the Dome was slamming, man.
Got off to a slow. Yeah, they were 3-13, Scott.
and then they started rolling, and everyone sort of, you know, got on board. You know, I remember some heated matchups with Georgia State when they came to the Dome, and the atmosphere was good. You know, with Ryan Harrow and those guys, but it was not like it was on Saturday. That wasn't as much about the matchup as it was, we just want to see this team play. We want that sense of nostalgia, obviously, with the Cajun Chicken. But, you know, it was their 20th win of the season, and we're here in early February.
You know, I thought, and I've always maintained, atmosphere begins with your students. And all year long, the students have responded pretty well when school's been in. And I want to give Coach Marlin and his staff credit for that, because they all personally went onto campus and talked to the Greeks and talked to other folks and said, guys, we need you. And they responded. And Sam DiMuzio, that name doesn't mean a whole lot to most people. As a matter of fact, I don't think it means anything to you. But he is the director of marketing and promotions at UL.
Did he make that sheet?
Yes.
Okay. I saw his name about that sheet earlier this week.
So, you know, he's got the sheet sitting there on the...
Tell the listeners that don't know what the sheet
well,
was.
Well, the sheet had a little bit about the opponent and a couple of the players, but it also said, okay, when they miss a free throw, this is what we're going to do. When they fumble the ball and it goes out of bounds, this is what we're going to do. And as a result, you had a lot of participation and everything was kind of together. And so kudos to Sam and his staff for that. Also, Coach Marlin, those red dot T-shirts, yeah, he ordered those. And they've ordered more for the next home game against ULM next week. When I say they, I mean the marketing department at UL. You know, they had the chicken T-shirts. The chicken was there, of course. You know, knew it was going to be received great. But
you gonna get into shape like Russell?
but the atmosphere started with that student section and with the band and the spirit. And then it permeated throughout the rest of the crowd.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was well put together.
Here's an email from Doug. He says, guys, I'm a little younger. I don't know the origin of the red dots. Could you explain?
That goes back to Blackham Coliseum. There were some shirts that they had made, and Dan maybe could tell you what was supposed to be on the shirts, but at any rate, there was a misprint. And so they couldn't sell them. So they just made this big red dot over the mistakes that they made. And they started handing them out in the student section. And they would bring the students. They wore them to every game. And back then, the students were seated in some bleachers behind the benches. Because there was a lot of room between the benches and the actual stands at Blackham. And they would all wear the red dots. They were rowdy as hell. They all got newspapers. And when it was time to introduce the other team's lineup, the red dots would open their newspapers and pretend to read. And then when it was time to do the Cajuns, they'd crumple up the newspapers and throw them and do that. By the way, you can't do that at the Cajun, though.
And it was written out on the form, like,
yeah,
don't crumble it up and throw it. Just put it down.
Yep.
No, it was cool. It was a great atmosphere, and it was a great win. I mean, this matchup against Southern Miss Thursday, I could use words to build it up, but I really don't need to. I mean, look at the records, look at the standings, look at the success on the court. I mean, Southern Miss hasn't lost since they lost to the Cajuns. Louisiana's won 10 in a row. And whoever, you know, they both have a two-game lead over everyone else. You get sole possession of first place, you're in prime position when the tournament rolls around. This is a huge matchup.
Well, the reason this is such a reward game for the Cajuns, you win the game, you've got a one-game lead in the standings. But you have a de facto two-game lead because you swept the season series. Mm-hmm. So if there's a tie, you get the tiebreaker.
They've essentially up a game and a half.
They've already got the tiebreaker against Marshall if Marshall gets into that mix. Now, they still have to go to James Madison, who's the fourth team in that conglomerate. This is going to be the first time, maybe in the 2023 calendar year, that the Cajuns are underdogs going into the game on Thursday. Now, the line hasn't come out yet, but I'm telling you, Southern Miss is going to be favored, probably by a couple points. You know, the Cajuns were a point-and-a-half favorite against Marshall the other night. But Southern Miss is going to be favored in that game. Like the Cajuns, they have not lost at home this year. And, you know, that's a team that won seven games last year and lost the 26 or something like that. And so winning over there is very new to them. They haven't done well since Larry Eustace was the head coach there. So so the fans are excited in Hattiesburg. Going to be a nice crowd there, and the Cajuns will be underdogs on Thursday. We'll see if they can overcome all of that.
If you're down, if you lose, you still got a lot of ball left to be played. But, man, if you win, it's like you said, you have the tiebreaker, so you're basically up a game and a half in first place. And then you're up three games on everyone else. That's I say everyone else. Three or more on everyone else. It's big time, man. And, you know, when it comes to the Sun Belt Conference tournament, everyone says, you know, get a top four seed. The difference between one and four, how big of a difference do you think that, the difference between four and five, I think, is perhaps a bigger gap than one and four as far as advantage goes. But how big is the advantage between one and four?
Well, here's the advantage. If you're one, you're guaranteed postseason play. If you go into the conference tournament as the one seed, you are guaranteed at minimum a bid to the NIT. So that's the prize. You know, one would still play four in the semifinals. And if you're the four, you'd wear the visitors' jerseys, but you'd still play each other. But if you're one, you're going to play basketball after the tournament is over with, guaranteed, and you're the only ones that can say that.
Yeah. Jay Walker in studio. It's the Great Scott Show, 103.3 The GOAT, simulcast on 1420. Got a lot of messages about my humps. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just saying it still makes me laugh every time. Jay emailed. I said I don't remember when we did that. Frequent listener, he says, it was in 2015 because I was coming from the Mississippi Gulf Coast and it was a rainy day. Had me rolling, LMAO.
I don't know how people remember all that stuff.
A moment like that, though, you know, it might stand out. There are certain moments on these shows that stand out more than others. What's one for you of our time together that stands out?
You'd have to give me some time to think about that.
Think about it. I'll ask you again in like 30 minutes. But it's been fun, man. 17 after
I'll tell you one thing that one time that I still think about and laugh. Speaking of thinking about and laugh, let me digress for just a second.
Sure.
It has never failed to make me laugh out loud. When the chicken came out as the Grim Reaper with 3 minutes and 40 seconds left, I laughed out loud. There's something about that black hood with the chicken face that just cracks me up every time.
And the ominous, like, music.
Yep. I don't know if you were getting ready to get married or had just gotten married. And I referred to your wife as the lizard on the show. And you went, Lizzie. And then you found out she was okay with it. And so then you started doing it too. But it was the look on your face the first time I referred to her as the lizard.
The lizard.
It was almost a look of panic like, oh, my God, you just pissed her off. And she's going to blame me for it.
The things that worried me in my 20s that I would just not care about now. Yeah, that she said that people have come up to her at one of her jobs this week, and they're like, "Hey, Lizard, you know, what's going to happen to the station?" And she's like, "Who are you?" You know, the Lizard. You know, maybe it's because my mom once got mad at you years ago because you were just referring to her as your mommy, and she was like, "Tell Jay to shut his mouth with that your mommy stuff." You're like, "You're going to the game with your mommy."
Yep.
And I was like, "My mom." You're like, "No, your mommy." And you were just, you know, egging me on, which I don't blame you. It was radio, but yeah, she did not like that.
Yeah.
And once I told you that, you stopped doing that.
Look, you know, I'm not doing anything going to make Patty mad at me.
No. I think since then it was always just like
hearts and flowers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know.
I even quit calling you LSP in case she decided she didn't like that.
No. I still call you ODB on occasion. But I think when we were still on like daily, that's what we called each other. But once it became a weekly thing, it just doesn't slap the same. You used to be like little Scotty Prather.
That's it. And that's before the show became the Sports Gap.
That was bird's eye view back in the day. I would hang out with you for 2 hours. And the ODB thing, that was a spur of the moment. I called you ODB with full intention of what it actually means. And then you were like, "Ouch." And on the fly, I'm like, "No, I just opinionated diverse Birdman. That's what I meant."
You remember I sent you a photograph of a bar at the Biscayne Mall in Florida. Yes. That was called ODB's.
Mm-hmm. I think you featured it in one of your old From the Bird's Nest.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that's true. On that trip, we were down to play the Florida schools, and Scott Farmer was on that trip, and we went and saw the Miami Heat, who I think were the defending champions at the time, play the Bulls at the American Airlines Arena, which was right across the street from where we were, where the ODB was. That was a very very memorable trip.
Bet it was, man. Sure, those tickets were not cheap. How'd y'all get them? Someone hooked you up.
Farmer had a hookup.
Yep. Someone hooked you up. Good stuff. Yeah,
we were sitting in the lower bowl in the end zone, but it, you know, the public address in Miami Heat, and when he said Heat, they had those things where all the flames started shooting about 40 feet high. And we're sitting a good ways away, and it got warm.
Felt the heat. Man, I was at a, reminds me, not sports related. My family, when I was a kid, we were on a trip, we'll just say out west in the summertime, kind of going out west. I mean, everywhere from Wyoming to Vancouver down to, it was a long trip. I was pretty young, maybe 7 or 8. And, we were in Vancouver for a night. Most of the trip, it was kind of in the great outdoors, so to speak. And I guess my dad was like, "Man, you know, the kids have been trucking it with us. We're in a city. Let me see if we can actually, you know, do something like that you could do in a big city." The Phantom of the Opera, the Broadway tour, was coming through Vancouver, and the Phantom was some guy that was on this old Nickelodeon show. So like we kind of knew who he was, and my dad's like, "We're not getting tickets to this." He's like, "Well, I'll try." My dad has a way of just talking his way into lots of things. I mean, I could tell you stories, and he like goes up and he's like has his cane and he's, "Hey, you know," he gives the guy some story about, "Yeah, I got my family, you know, retired and." Just I don't know if you have anything, but like, has anyone brought anything back? Like, is there anything available? And the, you know, nice folks of Canada, the guy's like, "Hey, yeah, actually, believe it or not, someone just came right before you and returned 5 tickets, and it was 5 of us." And he's like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "You want to buy them?" He's like, "Sure. What, you know, are they in the back?" He's like, "No, they're on the front row."
Oh wow.
and you know, I mean, Broadway productions are something. You sit in the front row, And we were, you know, we were young, but we, our parents listened to musicals a lot. And right before intermission, you know, Phantom starts screaming in some. He's like, no, no, no. And then, boom, there's this giant flame that just comes out from the front of the stage. And that's, you just made me think of it. Like the heat, you could just feel it out of nowhere. And it's kind of in like a big, dark theater. It was something, man.
It was not fake fire.
It was not fake fire. It was a heck of a production, too. And, you know, we had to hear that soundtrack for the rest of the trip and pretty much for the rest of my childhood. But it was a moment, man. The heat is on. The heat is on.
Glenn Frey.
The heat is on.
It's correct.
Not a terrible tune. I mean,
No.
It's a hit. It can be a little annoying. Like, I can only take it in doses. You know, I don't know that, like, I would want to hear it a lot. But you hear it at the right moment, you're like, all right, I can move my hips a little.
You know, I agree with that. There are some tunes from the 80s that when they come on, you always crank it up. And then there are others, and for me, that song fits in that. You hear it, and you say, oh, I haven't heard that in a while. That's nice.
My mother's listening. She said, thank him for all the memories. Love, Mommy. 25 after the hour. Yeah, that's one of those, like, the heat is on, or like, some like it hot. Some like it hot, like, oh, it brings you back for a moment, but I don't need, it's not like an old song by like Journey or something where you're like, you know what, I could just listen to this album all day.
You know, that, and people are going to say, Jay, really? But there are two songs came on the radio yesterday, and it was a beautiful day, and, you know, I had the sunroof open, you know, on the Jeep, and it was just, you know, and when the songs came on, I cranked them up. One was Murray Head's One Night in Bangkok.
Okay.
And the other one was The Safety Dance.
Is that Weekend Ends if we want to?
Yeah. Which has been played on Terrible Tune Tuesday by you, because I never would have done that.
That was early on, and that was a Steve Wiley suggestion, which, looking back, it wasn't one of my better choices.
No.
It wasn't one of my better choices. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we've had some misses.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some hits. I think there's one song that I played once that it just... It's the one that gets brought up the most when I meet someone and they're like, man, like Terrible Tune Tuesday, and they start singing this song. We'll play it for you next. It's the Great Scott Show. I'm Scott. That's Jay on a Tuesday. 103.3 The GOAT, simulcast on 1420. It's the GOAT, the greatest sports talk of all time.
We don't talk trash.
There is no team in the National Football League right now more balanced than the Dallas Cowboys.
We chew it up and spit it back out. 103.3 The GOAT.
Let's play ball, it's game day. Strikeouts, base hits, double plays. Take the field, hear the roar on the crowd. Come on, Marlins, make us proud. Come on, Marlins, make us proud. Keep hoping and
dreaming. You know, we have played a couple of Creed songs on Terrible Tune Tuesday. But my first exposure to Creed was that.
Really?
Okay. And so as a result, you know, Creed songs are, oh, no, terrible. And I, as you know, on my Facebook page, I've done several countdowns, my favorite songs from this. Well, I'm doing the 2000s right now. And, but there are two things. There's no Creed and no Nickelback ever.
If there was going to be a Creed song, now, it'd be this one.
Oh, absolutely.
For those that don't know the backstory, the former owner of the Florida Marlins thought that, bear in mind, this was like Creed had had their moment, and at this point in time, we're kind of a running joke. And he still loved him, and he's like, Scott Stapp, will you Could you create a theme song? We think it'll help really fire the team up and get people in the stands. They're the Marlins, and the song is called Marlins Will Soar. Marlins swim. They don't fly, for those that don't know. They're aquatic. But just the way that he, Scott Stapp, I'll say, creeds it up, it's...
Let's play ball, let's game day.
Yeah, that's great. That's great
now,
stuff.
Now, that's not the song that I was referencing earlier. There's, you know, we've played so many awful songs on Terrible Tune Tuesday. I laugh back thinking that, you know, after 8 years, people thought we'd run out of songs.
Never.
But there was one that, you know, it just, it's the one that I hear sung to me the most by listeners. Shit, I hear it sung by you.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured we don't need to come up with new ones. It's the last day. Let's just, that you and I are on together. Let's just play one memorable, terrible tune.
And I knew right away what it was.
And what is it, Jay?
It's Liquor and Whores on Terrible Tune Tuesday.
Liquor and whores, liquor and whores, the cigarettes and dope and mustard and bologna, liquor and whores. I was down, drinking at the Legion, and I met a girl, she was nice, she was pretty and pleasing. She said, hey boy, we should do some marrying. And I said, sure, but before we do, there's something that you should know. Liquor and whores, cigarettes and dope and mustard and bologna, liquor and drunk on gin, dancing with a lady friend. And she said, hey boy, you better fly the fuck home. I said no, cause of five little words, could have swore I said to you, I like liquor and mustard and bologna, liquor and I like liquor and whores, liquor and whores, cigarettes and dope and mustard and bologna, liquor and whores.
It just holds up well.
It does.
Some folks thought it was going to be.
No.
And while that one, you know, that one still gets played at Russo Park. I mean, but that's not, when I see people out and they bring up Terrible Tune Tuesday, they start singing Liquor and Whores.
Uh-huh.
Like, I didn't know anything about that show. I didn't know where the song came from. I didn't know when I played it that day, Jay, that it would have such a lasting impact. You get mad when we have Terrible Tune Tuesday and I don't just play it coming out of a break. You're like, how did you not even play a clip of it today?
I know.
Would you say it's your favorite Terrible Tune?
Yeah.
It's been
say
fun.
Say Ritz and
boom, boom, boom. Now let me hear you say, Wah-ho!
Wah-ho!
We got that one too.
All right.
Hall of Famer, Kathy May 15.
That is correct.
We're going to take another time out. We'll come back. Jay and I will chat for one more segment, get his thoughts on the Super Bowl, if he even cares. Will he even watch it? Or will he just watch halftime? It's all coming your way. Don't go anywhere. Great Scott Show continues right after this.
If it wasn't for goats, we wouldn't have coffee. Look it up.
I'm going to get some coffee. You want some coffee?
No, thank you. I'm fine.
And the best sports talk in Acadiana. 103.3 The Goat.
One of the worst songs of all time.
Yes.
Agadoo by Black Lace. Welcome back into the Great Scott Show on a Tuesday. Jay Walker in studio. Tomorrow on the Great Scott Show, limited commercial interruption. I've got Super Bowl week. I love to bring on players that played in Super Bowls. Got Brandon Stokely. Got Jake DeLone. And Thomas Morstead. Friends of mine, friends of the program, will all be on the show tomorrow. Don't miss it. Tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
This year's Super Bowl, Jay, where's your interest level for Eagles-Chiefs?
It's, I don't know, about a 3.5, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, look, I can't root against the Chiefs. Because my mom would come down from heaven and beat me up.
She loved Patrick Mahomes.
She loved Patrick Mahomes. Had Cincinnati won, I wouldn't even be watching. Not interested in Rihanna with the halftime show.
Okay.
Because it's going to be hard to beat the Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige from last year. And it's not even going to come close to Gaga. But it was, and you and I talked about this before the AFC Championship game and all this stuff about Burrowhead and the mayor of Cincinnati saying that Mahomes needed to go get a paternity test because Joe Burrow's his daddy. And I told you how Joe Burrow is really starting to turn me off because he was so damn cocky. And so
I still like Joe Burrow.
I was really rooting for Kansas City in that game.
Made for a spicy matchup.
Yes, it did. And, but if Cincinnati had won, I wouldn't even turn TV on.
Come on.
I'd go find something else to do.
Come on. You're that passionate about this?
Well, I can't stand the Eagles, okay? There's nothing about the Eagles that gets me excited.
Why can you not stand them?
I just never liked them.
Okay.
You know, I sort of liked them a little bit when Andy Reid was there. The year that they won the Super Bowl, I appreciated them because Doug Peterson was their coach.
Nick Foles.
Yeah. But no, I you know.
I think, like, I don't have a strong rooting interest. I suppose I like the Chiefs more than I like the Eagles, perhaps. Like, you know, good fan. I have some friends that live in Kansas City, as do you. You know, good fan base. And, you know, Mahomes is likable, but I kind of rode the Eagles for a while, and you know, a month ago when they were struggling, I was like, everybody's sleeping on the Eagles. Like, they're the one seed. They're going to get healthy, and they're going to go to the Super Bowl, and they're going to win. So I'm kind of just riding that wave because they were a one seed in 2017, and they were counted out, you know, with the backup. And I remember when the Saints were the one seed the year they won the Super Bowl. I was like, oh, well, they lost three games in a row and they're going in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they can do it. And I think everybody makes a big thing about, well, when the team is hot going into the postseason, it can make a difference. Well, I think that does have some merit, Jay. I think that's more true of your sports where you're going to have basketball, baseball, multi-game series, chemistry, playing at the right moment, being healthy. In football, man, like having the rest, especially now that it's only one team, I just think it's vital. I mean, we're talking about, an 18-week season, 17 games. and being that one seed, look, it's one versus one. And I don't think it's just because they had the best record in each league. I think getting that week of rest is really important. And, you know, Phillies, somebody was talking to me the other day, like, oh, you think they're going to pull out a bunch of trick plays? I'm like, no. I don't think you can see it. This is not Doug Peterson. You know, Sirianni's not doing anything that is aesthetically incredible to watch. Now, anytime Mahomes plays, they do. Like, he wants to lean on the defense. They've got a great defensive line, and he wants to run the football. Like, he doesn't want this to turn into a shootout, whereas the Chiefs would have no problem with this turning into a shootout.
Yeah, you're right. I was about to say the thing that Philadelphia does, really, unlike a lot of Super Bowl teams in the past few years, they can run the football, and they probably have the best running game in the NFL. So, I think Philly wins the game. I will root for the Chiefs. But I just don't care that much.
I think I appreciate Jalen Hurts.
Oh, I do too.
You know, to get replaced in a championship game, to come back the very next year as a backup, to then go in and help them win a playoff game, to then go somewhere else because you got 1 year left, to be a Heisman candidate in multiple places, to get in the college football playoff again, but you were at Bama, then you get replaced. You're a Heisman candidate at Oklahoma, but, you know, I don't think you can do it in the pros. You don't go in the first round. You come in as a backup. You replace the guy, then you get replaced again. And I don't know if, you know, some of it comes from his dad. His dad is a coach, and I think that helps with his mindset. I mean, Jay, we talk about it. We're for the transfer rule, and I think for some young men, it's good form. They want to go somewhere and play. But for others, the reality is it is sort of a way out of, well, it's not working out for me right now, so I just want to jump ship. I'm not saying it's one thing across the board. The fact that Jalen, everyone says, oh, he jumped ship. No, he didn't jump ship. He came back to Bama the next year. And the guy has been uber talented and doubted a lot as far as can he actually, he's really good, but can he actually do the best thing? Now he's in the Super Bowl, man. And so I'm not an Eagles fan per se, but I respect the heck out of Jalen Hurts' journey.
I agree with that. Got a text from Kent. Said, I was telling my college student son about the newspapers, talking about the days at Blackham. College students today don't know where to get a newspaper. And Craig says that he's still upset that we never played that stupid Room Without a Roof song. He's talking about Happy by Pharrell, a song that he hates.
Oh, it's a great song.
No, it is. It is a great song.
I'm not going to play that on Terrible
Exactly.
Tuesday, Craig.
Exactly. And now, Craig,
what's wrong with you?
You know, sometimes all of Craig's taste is in his mouth.
What? Unless he has COVID.
But he, you know, now he's very good at selecting bourbon. He's good at that.
Right. He's made you a bourbon like connoisseur.
I don't know about connoisseur, but he certainly made me a fan of it.
He has. You come in here talking about all these bourbons, and I'm like, I don't know what any of that is. I just know it's bourbon. I don't know all the differences.
You need to drink more.
Yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily what I need to do, Jay. I'll be honest with you. One listener chimes in on Twitter. He DM'd me. He said, I added Liquor and Horse to my playlist because of y'all. Thanks so much for introducing this and so many other terrible songs to me. You're very welcome.
Yes.
You're very welcome. And thank you for listening. We got a couple minutes left here. Jay, I want to thank you, brother, for all you've done for me, for bringing me in on your show. Shoot, 2005? You're like, this young guy's kind of annoying. Let me see if he wants to come on with me for an hour. And you let me start hosting your show, which, as much as you travel with a team, it was a lot. And you know, I really cut my teeth doing those 4 hours and 3 hours. And you know, the formats changed a lot in that time. But I came here, and Steve hired me, and it was $5.75 an hour.
Hey,
but the promise was, hey, we'll let you get on the air. Which was kind of silly on Steve's part. I mean, he didn't know if I was going to get on and just be terrible. But You know, he trusted me, interviewed me, and then from there, you know, I was able to get a show and be here as long as I have. And, you know, I feel blessed to be able to go out on my own terms, and I wish that many others could do the same. But certainly, you know, I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way. But a lot of times people be like, oh, you're mentor Jay. And I don't disregard that. I think you helped me a lot when I started. But people were still saying that like 10 years in. I'm like,
I think I can do this by myself now.
That's not what I mean by it. I wasn't offended by it. But I think the point I'm getting at is I think it was a mentorship for a little while, but it became a friendship pretty early on where the barrier of, okay, you've been here for a while and you're in charge. And like that there was that period of time, but it wasn't very long. And that's not because I suddenly was great or anything. It was just because we became friends despite the gap in age, despite, you know, the fact that you were, you know, the dean of Acadia in a sports talk and I was probably took
little
myself,
Scotty Prather. Little,
you know, I think we both used to take ourselves a bit more serious. I know I used to, or I used to attach my identity a little bit to this, which I haven't done in a long time. But, you know, you put up with me at a time where I'm sure my energy was a lot to handle, and I just appreciate, you know, everything you've done for me.
Shut up. I'm gonna say this. Okay, there have been a couple of folks where you've got the age gap and all of that other stuff, and honest to God, it was really hard to do a radio show with them for, you know, a lot of different reasons. From the day you got here, it was never that way.
Yeah.
And I don't – look, I'm almost 30 years older than you are. This should not have worked, especially at the beginning. It should not have worked. I should have been going into Grimsley and saying – why do I have to put this guy on the radio with me? That's what should have happened.
Yeah.
But it didn't. It clicked early. And I think part of it is how seriously you took it from the beginning. You wanted to be really good. It was never about your ego, which it is with a lot of young announcers. And, you know, there was just something that that made it work, and it made it work from the get. And I, you know, it shouldn't have worked, but it did, and it did. I think because you always had a maturity that was past your chronological age, or as Tony used to say, chronological age, and I never looked at you, except when we would talk about stuff and you'd say, yeah, I don't know anything about that, okay, because you weren't born or whatever.
Yeah.
I never looked at you as someone who was a kid, because the day you got here, you weren't a kid. You were fresh out of college, but you weren't a kid.
I was 23 when I started.
Yes, I know. And the fact that it clicked, I think, is credit to you. More than anything else, because like I said, you took it seriously and you came in with a certain maturity. These last 18 years have been special to me, and, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do next Tuesday. and I'm, you know, Somebody asked me after I was no longer here full time, they say, do you miss being on the radio? And I said, no, not really. I said, and part of that is because I still get to go in and hang out with Scott once a week. We're about to find out how much I miss being on the radio. We're about to find out. And it's going to be a little more difficult than it was 3 years ago, because you made the transition easy. So thank you. I love you. And I'm going to come knock on your door one day and ask if I can play with your kids.
Anytime. You know that door is always open, man. I love you, too. It's been fun. You were a part of every day of my life for a long period of time. I saw you more than anyone, and then I got married, and I saw you more than anyone other than my wife. And then I had kids, but you were there for, you were there when I got married, you were there when I had my first kid, and, you know, when COVID hit, that was tough. That was really the toughest thing, honestly, was not being able to see you all the time and have that show. But once you started coming back on Tuesdays, it filled that void a little bit. So it's been fun, man.
I don't know if I can say this. When COVID hit and it all came down, and that email was going out that day, our general manager offered to call me and break the news that I wasn't going to be on the radio anymore. And you said, no, he's going to hear it from me, and he's going to hear it face to face. I always respected you, Scott, but you handled your business like a grown-ass man. And I'll never forget that.
Love you, brother.
Love you, too.
All right. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow morning. The Dan Patrick Show is next.